And welcome into the Wednesday edition, Robbie and Rexrode, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode, Ian Safar here with you on this Wednesday morning, live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. We got a lot to get into on the program here today. Paul Kuharsky from PaulKuharsky.com will be with us later in the program. It is week one for the Tennessee Titans, and we will get into the matchup with the Denver Broncos with PK a little bit later in the show. Joe Rexrode, good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. Whoever wore these headphones last has a massive noggin. So I was like, I had to crank it way down. It must be Big Joe, right? Big
no,
Joe?
That'd be Willie. Willie?
Really?
Just got called out by Rexrode.
I did not know.
That is his seat.
Well, he is a smart dude, big brain. I guess I didn't realize his noggin was that
big. I think
big.
He had a backwards Mets hat on yesterday, too.
Oh, yeah, great. Stupid Mets. Just beating the crap out of my Tigers this week. Thanks for
– again,
I'm glad it reminded me of that. Oh, yeah. We've got pitching issues, man, for a team with, flirting with the best record in baseball. Pretty wild, actually. It's, the best pitcher in the whole game and then, two other dudes who are – good, and then a bunch of bags of baseballs.
Just get in the playoffs. They're just waiting for the playoffs.
Well, yeah. My optimism is
fading.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, a lot of bad pitching performances out there,
and
the Mets are just having a playland right now.
Not good.
But they need it. They need it more than we do.
Ian Safar, how are we doing? What's going on?
Doing great, thanks. Happy, I guess, hump day already, huh?
Yeah.
Wednesday. Love a good short week for everybody.
Happy Fantasy Draft Day, too.
It is.
Fantasy Draft Day. Get last one in the books, I think. I'll do this one, friends and family, family one, and then a little Yahoo $5 one.
There you go.
Then I'll probably be done.
Wait, so you haven't drafted those ones yet?
No, I have.
Oh, okay.
This will be the last one.
This is the final piece.
Gotcha.
And then probably just wrap up with those three.
Yep.
Nice.
I did my first one last night, second one tonight, so... Getting after it.
I helped Caroline draft last night. This is her first fantasy league at work. And first of all, it's a 15-team league. It's like everybody there. So it's like, wow. Also, they did 15 seconds for your pick. You ever done that one before?
That's ridiculous.
I'm like, what? Go! She's like, go to tight ends. Go! Somehow, we never got auto-drafted, but it was like, oh my. I mean.
That'll keep you on your toes.
A 15-person draft. It was done in 20 minutes, though.
It's amazing.
I know. I mean, there is something. What's our time?
Minute
commissioner.
30. Yeah,
you're given 90 seconds.
I mean, the other option. Some people do 2 minutes. I was like, no.
Yeah,
minute
30's
good. Minute 30's good. And there will be some people that use the entire 1 minute and 30 seconds each time.
I can make a case for 1 minute.
I mean, I'm not necessarily opposed to 1 minute.
Just saying,
not opposed to it.
I mean, we could put it up for a vote for the people who are in the Fantasy League.
Well, if you and Kuharsky would sign up for the Fantasy League. I could get the draft order in there, and then we could put it up to a vote if you want to.
I will do that.
Okay.
Very shortly.
Okay. We'll see. It's good. It's tonight, so that'd be good to sign up for the league.
Yeah, I'm helping children draft.
I mean, speaking of Kuharsky, I mean, you were really mad at him yesterday, and the rant railed against Kuharsky yesterday for the Titans Media League, and he sent us a text yesterday claiming that you got two emails from ESPN, so we're going to have a bit of a squabble, I think, today when he gets in here. Some conflicting reports.
Oh, yeah, now I see your text. Yeah, I had stuff going on yesterday, so he called me, too, and I couldn't answer, and then I just totally forgot about it. But, okay. So I had ESPN send two emails. What does that mean? I had ESPN.
Oh, the phrasing on it was weird. Yeah. He's like, yeah, I called ESPN. I told him to send you some emails.
Yeah, you contacted.
I think it was just the ESPN fantasy league that he uses would automatically send you an email.
What do you do? You send a link, and you're still, and it's still tough to get a response from some people, you know. But
same
you
person.
Actually, yeah. Yeah, but I mean, but at least there's a personal hey, the league. I mean, I've never been a part of a league where there wasn't someone who had to be like, hey, dude,
I agree.
The draft,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And that's usually a human speaking to another human. Am I right?
That would be correct.
Okay. I mean, I can save this for Kuharsky because, you know, you really don't deserve to be yelled at for it.
Oh, I can't wait until he gets here today. Matter of fact, I hope he shows up early. A little bit of extra time to yell.
That'd be fine.
We'll see what happens on that front. Titans opening up their season against Denver this weekend. We will take your thoughts throughout the show on all that. 615-737-1025. I think people are getting out of control, Rex Road, on one specific aspect of this team. And we've talked a lot about like who's the second option going to be for the Titans beyond Calvin Ridley when it comes to throwing the ball and catching the ball, and who's that second receiver going to be. And I tend to lean towards what Kuharsky has said throughout all this, which is it's probably going to be somebody different from a week-to-week basis. Like 1 week it may be Lockett, the next week it may be Helm, then it may be Io Manor. I mean, I think it's going to bounce around as to how that goes. But I do think there's a little too much, in my opinion, assuming going on that Alec Io Manor is just going to be their number two wide receiver and is going to turn into this good player in the NFL. And I don't want people to hear what I'm not saying. I like Alec Io Manor. I like some of the physical traits that he brings to the table. He's a rookie who was drafted in the fourth round, okay? And I'm not saying that dooms him to being a bad player. But what I am saying is we don't know that he's going to be a good NFL football player. We could get 8-9 weeks into this season, and it could become pretty clear that he's not very good. And people are just totally dismissing that as a possibility. Like, I heard Chase and Big Joe talking yesterday, and it was like, well, by the time like middle of the season comes around, the number two wide receiver on this team needs to be Alec Io Manor. And I'm like, well, does it need to be Alec Io Manor because of him, or does it need to be Alec Io Manor because you look at the rest of the receiving core and you realize it's not very good? Because to me, those are two very different things. Like, you're talking about a fourth round rookie coming in. And let me just very quickly do some Titans draft history here. And I won't take up too much time with this, but you know, they drafted Derek Mason before they became the Tennessee Titans back in, when was that, 97 in the fourth round.
Yep.
Pretty good fourth round wide receiver there. Let's go through some history since then. Darren Hall in the sixth round. Tyrone Calico in the second round. Justin McCarron's Eddie Berlin in the fourth and fifth round. I've only gotten to 2001 at this point. Calico was drafted in 2003. Let's see here. They got Roydell Williams in the fourth round. Brandon Jones in the third round. Jonathan Orr in the sixth round. Paul Williams in the third round. Chris Davis in the fourth round. These are all receivers that none of you have ever heard of. Lavelle Hawkins in the fourth round in 2008. Dominique Edson in the sixth round in 2009. Let's see here. Damian Williams in the third round. Mark Mariani in the seventh round. Pretty good returner. Pretty good player for them. Justin Hunter in the second round. Like, I can keep going. Doriel Green Beckham, Trey McBride. Like, these are all Tajay Sharp in the fifth round.
Taywan Taylor.
Like, these are all receivers that they've drafted. In some cases, Dez Fitzpatrick, maybe the shining example in the fourth round. There's a history, and I'm not trying to get into a Titans DNA conversation that Kuharsky likes to get into, because I think sometimes that gets a little silly. But what I'm saying is we have seen a lot of wide receivers come and go around here that have been drafted fourth round, fifth round, third round, that have not even approached working out in the NFL. And I'm not saying that that's what Alec Io Manor is going to be, but I think there's way too much to say, oh, it's Alec Io Manor. He's going to be fine. He's going to be number two wide receiver at the end of the year out there. And I'm trying to figure out where that comes from and if we've lost our minds not remembering that he's a fourth-round wide receiver. Again, there is a shining example of a fourth-round receiver that this organization has drafted that works on this radio station. Worked out pretty well for them. But there's a lot of assuming going on out there that Io Manor is just automatically going to be good, and I'm not willing to go there at this point. Let's see him play some games.
And all those names that you listed – I'm assuming that some of them had some decent preseason plays, catches, looked okay in practice, ran around.
I remember watching Lavelle Hawkins in the preseason and being like, get that guy the football. Get Lavelle Hawkins the football as much as you possibly can.
What happened to Lavelle Hawkins?
That's a good question.
I think it would be great.
I'd love it.
Yeah, it would be great for that. And I think there's some promise. Like, I think there's definitely something there. But, yeah, assuming anything with him is
Kyle Phillips, fifth round.
In a vacuum. Oh, yeah.
I'm just finding more. There's more and more that I can say.
Yeah.
Well, they're everywhere.
Have you mentioned Treylon Burks?
Yeah, and getting to the first round.
There's that. Yeah. Yeah, so you were keeping it to the middle rounds,
though. Well, I did roll off a couple like second rounders.
But
like mainly middle round guys that I just read off.
I remember Brandon Jones, he flashed for like a quick second.
Yeah.
But Rordell Williams maybe flashed a couple of plays here and there.
Yeah, for sure.
Like that's like, it.
They've had their moments.
That was it.
Well, that's a good.
It was super short.
College production.
But again, like
translate.
I like Io Manor. I was surprised that Io Manor lasted as long as he did in the draft. But he also lasted as long as he did in the draft. So I'm just – all I'm saying is I think there's a lot of looking at the wide receiver situation for the Titans and saying, Lockett's 33 and we don't like Van Jefferson around here. Van Jefferson's not any good. DK didn't do much in the preseason, but he's going to be returning punts. So, yeah, it's just got to be Io Manor. Like, there's a lot of, like, well, by default, Elik Io Manor is going to have to be their number two. And I'm just – all I'm saying is we hadn't seen this kid play a game yet. He's a fourth-round rookie wide receiver, and there's a long history in this organization of those guys not working out. There's a lot of assuming going on.
Yeah. And, you know, the unknown being undefeated, part of it. Like, so, like, in a vacuum, you know, it would be kind of unrealistic to expect someone drafted there to – again, sometimes someone drafted there is Amon-Ra St. Brown. So, hey, man, you never know. But the history of the organization does – and, yes, I mean, then you don't – you get into the Kaharsky thing, and it's like, well, if different people are picking, right? Someone on the text line is like, well, this is about, like, bad QB play over the years. Like, yeah.
To a degree.
I mean, there's probably some truth to that. But, I mean, they've had other receivers who still produced in their offenses, right?
I can go back through the early part of this list where Steve McNair was the quarterback, and they drafted a whole bunch of these dudes in the fourth round, and it just did not work.
Yeah.
And I don't think that was because of quarterback play.
Yeah, I mean, it would be a huge development for them. I think we'll see a little bit of him. But, like, honestly, if on Sunday – if we just saw, like, Jefferson, Lockett, and Ridley the whole game, basically,
yeah.
I wouldn't be that surprised.
I wouldn't be either. Again, I'm rooting for the kid. I hope he's really good. And I hope, like, we get 3 weeks into the season and be like, hey, remember when Robbie was trying to throw caution to the wind about Elik Io Manor out there because he's an idiot? I hope that's a conversation we're having here in about a month.
Freezing cold takes.
All I'm saying is there's a lot of assuming going on out there that he's just automatically going to be good. And I think the root of it is because you look at the rest of the wide receivers and you're like, well, he's got to be. Like, he's got to be good.
Yeah.
And I think that's a very dangerous game to play. 615-737-1025. Our phone number, 615-737-1025. A lot of reaction to this. We'll get into this coming up next. Take your thoughts on Elik Io Manor and the number two wide receiver for the Tennessee Titans, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. I'm throwing it out there. Maybe pump the brakes a little on the Elik Io Manor discussion and just the automatic assumption that he's going to be good. Now, I will say this, Joe. Titans didn't help us yesterday. You know, the unofficial depth chart came out, and you've got Calvin Ridley. You've got Elik Io Manor and Tyler Lockett as their starting wide receivers in the top three there. So,
oh, well, there you go.
No Jefferson. You've got it's an unofficial depth chart, so there are limitations as to what it actually means. But in the unofficial depth chart, it's Ridley, it's Lockett, it's Io Manor starting for the Tennessee Titans.
Well, that to me, if I'm a Titans fan, I like to hear that. That's what I like to hear.
I
want him
too.
To play.
Yeah.
I want him to do well. So I don't know why, you know, why would – Callahan put that on the depth chart. I know the depth chart is like, whatever, you got to take it with a grain of salt, but that's one of those things where it's like you could easily just default to the veterans and just see what happens. Put them on there. I think maybe that is a little bit of a commentary.
Well, look, some of this is also, look, we know what Van Jefferson is, right? Van Jefferson, despite the fact a couple weeks ago, you know, everybody around here was talking about how he's never caught football in his life. Then he made one play in the preseason where the defensive back fell down, and then all of a sudden he was good again. Van Jefferson is a, number five wide receiver? Is that what he is in the league? Number four? Number five? Somewhere in that neighborhood?
Probably a four.
So we know what he is. Like, he's an okay player that if he's playing a lot for you at wide receiver, that's probably not good. Probably not good for your football team. So, again, I think some of this discussion comes back to that of like, okay, well, if it's not going to be Io Manor, we don't really feel like DK. Like, DK kind of feels to me like the, hey, if you need a deep shot guy, maybe sneak him in for a few plays and see if you can hit one down the field. We know that Jefferson throughout his career has not been a starting level wide receiver. He's kind of a veteran backup guy that you can rely on. Lockett has been a starting level wide receiver. We'll see if he still is at age 33 here in a few weeks and what that looks like at this point in his career. So again, I'm just wondering how much of this is Elik Iomanner as a player and where he is right now versus the necessity for him to elevate in this lineup. I've said this before.
But we don't know.
I don't know. He could come out there on Sunday against Denver and have six catches for 95 yards and two touchdowns. I have no idea. I hope so. Like, look, believe me, I've talked about this. I am so tired of watching bad Titans football. I hope that they've got a ton of guys this year that play way better than I think they're going to heading into this year. But I also believe, based on where their roster is right now, that the next guy that's kind of like their guy at wide receiver probably is not on the roster yet. Like, Elik Iomanner, I hope he turns into a good player. I think in a perfect world, he's probably like your number three or number four here in a year or two when you've done some more drafting and adding to this roster.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, again, you hope better. You watch him out there. I mean, I think he's got talent. He's got ability.
I agree.
But, yeah, I mean, coming up real soon, next offseason, I think there's a major – you have to have a major draft capital addition at the position, I would think. No matter what happens this year. I mean, I guess unless he is like a rookie of the year candidate, you're like, oh, gee, I guess that's all set then, you know. But
yeah,
that's getting a little bit unrealistic. Ryan in Florida, by the way, had a Calico and McCarron's jersey. Someone said that.
That's a tough one.
Liam said Calico was figuring it out, and Roy Williams did the horse collar thing on him. Is that right?
I believe that is correct.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely, yeah.
Towards ACL and was never the same.
Was he figuring it out? He's all right.
I feel like I had Calico on a fantasy team.
I mean,
the speed was very.
Yeah, he was a deep threat guy.
Very tempting.
Yeah. Wow, he's a big guy. He's fast.
Yeah.
He showed promise, but he was not developed as far as wide receiver one or anything.
He's still one of the best of the people that Robbie listed, so.
That's true.
That's saying something.
That's true. I mean, all I'm saying is I think you have to separate hope from reality. Like, I am very interested to see, number one, how much he plays on Sunday, but number two, how effective he could be. Because I saw TD talking about this yesterday. You're going to see a lot of match coverage from the Broncos. They've got a very good secondary. My guess is they're probably going to do all they can do. Number one, to stop the run with Tony Pollard. And number two, in the passing game, when they're in obvious passing situations, they're going to probably shade some coverage toward Calvin Ridley. And then you're going to have somebody else out there winning one-on-one matchups. And can Elik Iomanner in game one as a rookie against that defense on the road in the altitude do that on a consistent basis? I don't know the answer, but I think we're going to find out some of the answer on Sunday.
Yeah, so he's like a lot of this offense, which is like, I'm not saying you take no conclusions from week one. It's one of 17 games. It's important, but like I could see a lot of people and how they look this week for the Titans. You know, maybe trending toward the lower part of what they could do. You know, trending closer to the floor than the ceiling. Just because of the opponent and the situation, yep. You know, so, but we'll overreact. By the way, so if you just go by the skill guys, since A.J. Brown, if you want to talk about draft history, let's see, little Darrington Evans.
Yeah.
Let's see, you've got some Dez Fitzpatrick, as you mentioned.
Tough one.
Throwing a little Racy McMath, too, if you want. Traylon Burks, Hassan Haskins. I mean, there was some excitement about Hassan Haskins. Kyle Phillips, as we talked about, talk about a camp hero.
Yep.
Chig would be the one guy since A.J. Brown who has done anything. Well, I shouldn't say that because Tajay Spears has too. But he even has been, relative to the hype and expectations, a little bit of a disappointment. Certainly not, struggling to stay healthy. Let's see.
Jaquan Jackson.
Throwing a little Jaquan Jackson, too, if you want. Yeah, and then, of course, we got these guys this year. So, I mean, it's been just like a lot of things, but like just at the skill position only, it's been basically completely barren since 2019 in the draft.
Yeah.
Which, again, helps. I mean, if you go in this draft history of the Titans, it definitely helps explain what's going on the field.
Yeah. And look, some people would say, hey, they're due, man. They're due to find one of these guys. I hope you're right. I mean, again, I hope.
They need to be better at finding these guys.
I hope Io Manor comes in and he's really, really good. And, you know, look, he had a really good college career. I don't have, like, zero hope for the guy. I'm just saying I think the expectations for him are getting, like, I saw some people on Titans Twitter talking about, like, you think Io Manor could get, you know, 850 yards this year? And I'm like, 850 yards? I mean, I'd love that, but he's a fourth-round rookie. 850 yards. Sign me up for it right now, but I don't think he's going to approach that. That's just me.
The funny thing is, well, 850, that's good. But I was going to say, like, because of the state, like you're saying, it's a necessity thing. Given that and given maybe some, you know, some fourth quarters where you're down multiple scores, et cetera, I mean, you know, that's probably more possible for him than, like, some rookies who are, like, on a better team with a better receiver, right?
It could be.
Like it. Yeah. But 850, though, would be – that would tell you something.
I just wonder where the ball is going this year beyond Ridley. Like, the more I look at it, like, I think Gunnar Helm will be a very good – red zone weapon, right? Like, I think he could be useful in the red zone. You know, as you're moving up the field between the 20s, is Gunnar Helm going to be like some consistently reliable target? We'll see. Chig, I have no idea. Like, Chig, to me, until he proves that he's more than what he's been, I just am going to think that he's what he's been at this point.
He'll be involved.
Yeah, he'll be involved in the offense.
Maybe he can be more of a big play guy.
The thing about him is his rookie year, I was like, yeah, get him the ball because after the catch, he's pretty good. And he's had some plays like that since then, but very limited. And then last year, you know, running into trouble catching the ball. It's like, you got to catch the ball. Got to make sure you bring the ball in when you're there. So I just feel like the second and third targets for the Titans are going to be a pretty big work in progress throughout the year, which puts a lot of pressure on Ridley. Even in this game, like, it's a really difficult matchup that he's about to go up against with Surtain in that secondary. But they got to have him. Like, he's got to find a way. This big Brian Callahan game, too. Like, got to find a way to get him the ball and get him open.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think we're going to learn about. But I think it is. I think we're probably going to see a rotation, and I think it's going to vary after him. But, yeah, then you have those weeks where I could see Denver absolutely traveling Surtain a decent amount and be like, yeah, just take him out and show me what else you got.
Yeah.
And so, they need somebody to step up, and it is a big question. And, you know, even, like, again, Tajay Spears may have been disappointing, but to me, this is a game. I mean, his role could be important, right, as a guy out of the backfield catching the ball.
615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. A lot of your thoughts to get to in the Titans offense. We will do that coming up next. Coming up later this hour, college football coach already taking a shot at another one. We're 1 week in. We'll get into all that. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Later today on 94.9 The Fan, the Sounds taking on Norfolk. Pregame, first pitch at 5:35. Coverage also available on the Game Nashville app and at TheGameNashville.com. Sounds baseball on ESPN 94.9 The Fan, presented by Twin Peaks and Family Leisure. We will have Paul Kuharsky from PaulKuharsky.com with us on the program later in the show. We will get into the matchup with the Denver Broncos, week one, all things Tennessee Titans with him. Taking your thoughts in the meantime, 615-737-1025, our phone number. One texter says Gunnar Helm is going to surpass Chig. That very well may be the case. I think you're going to see them both out there a lot. And again, you know, we'll see what Helm is. I liked a lot of what we saw from Helm in the preseason. I think based on how much he played, where he played, the coaching staff liked a lot of what they saw from Gunnar Helm in the preseason as well. I mean, really, the thing that stands out was the catch he made in Atlanta, where he had two guys basically draped all over him in the end zone, and he came down with a ball. So, you know, being able to go up and make contested catches like that and being a big target in the red zone is a good thing for your quarterback, and we'll see what Gunnar Helm can do as the regular season begins there. I still look at this offense, Joe, and so much of our attention is going to be on the quarterback, as it should be. But again, the targets beyond Ridley, how does that come into focus this year? And does Ward elevate that, right? Like, you know, how quickly are we talking about Ward elevating some of these guys? Does Tyler Lockett in the slot give you something that you've really not had in this offense for a while, right? Like, you know, they wanted Kyle Phillips to be that dedicated, true slot guy, and it just didn't work out. He couldn't stay healthy. Last year they brought in Tyler Boyd, and it was clear pretty early that he was a shell of himself and wasn't the same guy. You know, Lockett, at this stage of his career, can he be a reliable guy for you over the middle? Like, he caught 49 balls last year. Would you sign up for that right now? Do you want more from Lockett this year based on where he's going to be playing? Like, Lockett is a guy that has played inside in his career but has also spent a lot of time playing outside in his career as well. So, you know, with how he's going to be utilized in this offense, what is he at this point? And here's the other thing with Lockett, and I don't think this is going to be the case. I hope it's not the case. But at age 33 coming up, does he just fall off the table? Like, is this Tyler Boyd all over again? Because that would be something where it's like, man, if that happens, and then you got two rookie fourth-round receivers and Van Jefferson out there, then you're in real rough shape if that takes place.
Yeah. I think he'll be better than Tyler Boyd based on, you know, he looks like he's got more in the tank than Tyler Boyd did. But I don't know. I don't know, you know, like, if he's going to have a big year, if he's going to be able to advance on 49 catches. I would guess that, you know, again, given like what we're talking about, the general lack of weapons, that he could get close to that production. You know, it's like the slot. I think, you know, they move people around. I mean, Ridley will work out of there and, yep, and things like that. But yeah, I mean, I think Helm is important, and that's the thing. It's like, you look at this draft class, you got those three guys in a row, and then you talk about the history. I mean, anybody who works in that building who, well, not the scouts, but the front office people who work in that building, the new ones, and there's three key new ones, would all be like, well, I had nothing to do with any of these other guys you're talking about.
Yep.
So if it works out this year, it's like, hey, there you go. I mean, that right there is a pretty good sign of, like, improvement in the front office, you know. If even, like, Helm is a starting-level tight end and one of those two fourth-rounders, again, yeah, becomes, like you said, like, if you can get, like, a good third receiver out of that, that's realistically, you know, like, that's pretty good. I mean, Matthew from Jolton was like, for every you know, for every Dez and Doriel DGB, there's a D. Mason Amon-Ra. I think for every D. Mason Amon-Ra, there's about 20 Dezes. I mean, right? Like, go through the fourth round of the NFL draft year after year after year. You'll find some gems.
Yeah.
You'll find some.
You'll find some, like, absolute duds.
And you will have a huge, if you list it all out, like, guys who really made it big and, oh, crap, who the heck was that? I don't remember him going. Like, the list on that side will be way longer.
Yeah, and again, like, that doesn't doom Io Manor. But I just think, you know, talking with TD about, we've asked TD about Io Manor a lot, and I'm interested to get PK's thoughts on this later. But, you know, TD has talked about how when he, I think the phrase he used either last week or the week before with us is, when he hits, he hits, right? Like, you look at it and you're like, man, okay, pretty good size guy, runs the route effectively, can use his size, all those things. And then, you know, the practice that he had against Atlanta, where it was A.J. Terrell against him, and he was just totally shut down, right? And he talked about it being the worst practice of camp. And, you know, it's a rookie, right? Like, he's inconsistent in his performance right now. So that doesn't doom him this year. It doesn't mean he can't have good games. But I think there's probably going to be a learning curve for him, just like there is most every rookie, right? So if there's a learning curve for him and it's inconsistent from game to game early in his career, which, again, is not a bad thing, that he's a rookie, what does that mean for the offense? Like, I just think that there's a lot of question marks about what that's going to mean about their production, throwing the ball through the air. And I don't know. That to me, I don't even know that Sunday's a great test for that, just because Denver is so good defensively, right? Like, I think they've got a – it's just – to me, it's a huge matchup problem that they got on Sunday against that Denver defense. And that's the front. That's the pass rush. It's the secondary. I mean, there's a reason that they're one of the, I don't know, top five defenses in the NFL. It's a big matchup problem for the Titans on Sunday. Doesn't mean they can't overcome it. But on paper, you look at it, you're like, ooh, I don't know. It's a tough way for the Titans to start the season based on where their offense is, how young it is, and just the quality of competition that they're going up against on Sunday.
Yeah, so you go into it as a fan knowing that that there will be more opportunity in some weeks, but I guess it's also like, hey, there's going to be a lot of talk. There already is. They're answering questions about this defense. I mean, Brian Callahan talked a ton about it on Monday. So it's also one of those like Vrabel would use this. Sorry to invoke Vrabel, but I'm just saying, some coaches would absolutely lean into this whole idea of, oh, yeah, well, this is supposed to be some terrible matchup for us, blah, blah, blah. I mean, you can talk all you want. Doesn't mean you're going to do anything.
I mean,
but, I guess you would rather your rookie quarterback not have to start like this, probably. You know, like if you could pick it, you'd probably pick like a home game against a crappy team, for your rookie to start. But at the same time, there is a little bit of, I mean, the expectations, as we're discussing now and discussed all over town and through the fan base all week, is, I mean, I think most people who are realistic understand, like, if the Titans get 20 on Sunday, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
17 isn't terrible. Now, you know, I have no idea. Like,
get excited.
But then the other side of the ball, I have no idea. You know, I mean, can they keep the score down and keep you in the game? I don't know.
Well, I mean, I don't think this is going to surprise anybody, but the line is 7.5. Denver's favored by 7.5. That's the second biggest spread in the league in week one. The only one that's bigger is actually the game tomorrow, where Philadelphia is an 8.5-point favorite against Dallas. So, I mean, I'm with you. Like, if I'm Callahan, I'm using a lot of that as, like, hey, we're going somewhere and nobody thinks we're going to have any shot. And I think he's going to be able to give that speech a lot this year if he wants to give that speech a lot. And I think that, you know, certainly we've seen teams get galvanized by that before. We'll see what it means for this team. But I just think it shows you, particularly, like, as a rookie quarterback with a young offense, it would be difficult to draw up a much tougher set of circumstances for them to begin the season. And I think we got to keep that in mind heading into week one.
Yep. And, you know, I expect Cam to lean into that and love that idea. And, there's not nothing to lose, but there is a little bit of that, you would think, with these guys. So, Joy from Bellevue's talking about Willie. Okay, here's a question that apparently Willie asked. I didn't hear this. If you take Chig, Jefferson, Lockett, or you take DK, Oliver, Helm, and Alec?
Yeah, it was the old guys versus the young guys.
Who will have more yards? Old guys versus the young guys. I mean, if you're counting Ridley with the old guys, then I'm taking the old guys. But it looks like he's not counting Ridley.
I'm taking the old guys either way. I think
Jefferson Lockett
will, and I think Lockett will be responsible for most of that. But I think they will have more yards than DK, Oliver, and Helm.
I don't know. Do you think we're sleeping on Bryce Oliver?
I don't know.
Like, do you think he'll have more of an impact on offense other than just like, oh, he's a great gunner? And that's why he made the team.
He's just depth.
I think he's depth. Like, I don't know how much he's going to play on offense, but maybe. Like, he had a good preseason, right? Like, he was making plays on a daily basis.
It's a good question because, like, if all of a sudden he's out there for 30 offensive snaps, I'll be surprised, but, like, you can't be that surprised, right?
Well, based on where this – I mean, what happens if you get into week one and it's like, yeah, you know, I don't know that Io Manor's quite ready for this. Like, at this moment, I guess I could be wrong, like, do you expect DK to play a lot on offense?
No,
I don't. I don't think he's going to play very, very much on offense. So, I mean, pretty quickly you could get into a place where it's like, well, Oliver's got to be out there at least a little bit. So, I don't know. Like, what's he going to be? We have a very, very, very limited sample size of Bryce Oliver in the NFL in actual regular season games. So, what is he at this level? I have no clue.
Yeah, I think he's depth, but yeah, maybe he is going to be out there a fair amount. I mean, there's a lot of questions to be answered. Maybe PK will know some of these things.
We'll see a little bit later in the program. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. 1 week into the college football season, Joe, and we've already got some high-profile coaches sniping at one another, or at least one coach sniping at the other one. I don't know if the other one's sniped yet. We'll get into that coming up next. It's pretty funny. 615-737-1025, our phone number, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Paul Kuharski will be with us later in the program. We will get into all things Tennessee Titans with him. Joe, spent a lot of time yesterday discussing week one of college football. Great weekend of college football. Some big games, big results, and now some sniping going on in the aftermath of it. Dabo Swinney got up on the podium yesterday and started talking about basically equating the LSU-Clemson game to a final exam. He's like, you know what? It's a final exam early in the year, first class of the year. You get the final exam. And he was talking about how he didn't really feel like either team played all that well. And Brian Kelly of the LSU Tigers took exception to that. I think we've got – do we have both clips here?
We sure do.
We will play first Dabo Swinney and what he said, and then Brian Kelly's response to that yesterday.
It's like getting the final exam day one of class. They made a 65, we made a 58. Neither one of us were great.
We dominated him in the second half. So he's either a really good grader giving himself a 58, or he's a really hard grader on us, or he didn't see the second half, which that might be the case. He might not have wanted to see the second half. This is all like, you know, past.
Brian Kelly wins one game, one season over. He starts popping off at the mouth, Joe.
Well, so obviously, I assume he got asked this, right?
Yes.
That is important, you know. But it's like, first of all, I don't think what Dabo said was any sort of rip on LSU.
I don't think so either.
I mean, I think he was wrong, because I agree. Like, in the second half, I'd give LSU an A, and I'd give Clemson a D. But whatever, right? Yeah, I get what he's saying. And then somebody in there, oh, Dabo, you're so funny. But, like, why does Brian Kelly have to turn that
into this? I mean, the final score is 17-10, yeah, you know?
Right. I mean, it was 10-3 at the half.
Yeah.
14 on the second half. But, it's like – now, I will give Brian Kelly – did you see what he said on Feinbaum? That was pretty good.
No, I did not.
Feinbaum had him on, and, you know, Feinbaum's like, oh, congratulations. I do a really good Feinbaum.
That's really good, yeah.
We're close friends. Well, congratulations, Coach Kelly. No, but Brian's like, well – you know, I come on here whether I win or lose. And, Paul, I appreciate you coming on after the big loss you suffered this last weekend.
Ripping
on Bama. So I like taking a little shot at Bama there. I like that and Feinbaum. That was good. But, yeah, this is like, come on. What is this? You think that, like, Dabo was actually, like, taking a shot at you with that? It was just a goofy Dabo-ism. And, by the way,
I don't think in the scale of Dabo-isms, I didn't think it was that bad.
No. BK is just a special brand of
jerk
guy.
Yeah. I was searching for the right word. FCC compliant.
He likes to. And that's the thing. It's like, oh, God. Every year he's had the forced humility of losing the opener. And now this year he gets a huge win in the opener. He might just be insufferable this year. But also with Dabo, I must say, too, I think there was a little bit – Pat Forty wrote about this a little bit, and I totally agree. Like, there was a little bit too much. Were we wrong about Dabo? He not doing the portal, this – and look at his team. And look, I bought into it, too. I mean, and you watch that game, and it's just like – I mean, LSU helped themselves a lot in the portal, and they're better than them, and they went and beat them on the road. And, you know, like, Clemson could definitely win the ACC, but they're not a national championship contender. So, slow down on all the Dabo. Like, we don't need to, like, apologize to Dabo.
He's got a winning record against the SEC, against the Big Ten, and against the Big 12. He was very quick to point that out the other night after the loss.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, he hasn't beaten an SEC team in a long time. I think he's like lost his last four.
I'm telling you what he said.
Well, thank you, Dabo. Did you see the Lanning Gundy thing too?
I did, yeah.
To quickly, so Gundy's talking about how they got to play Oregon, and it's such a huge difference in the money and everything. Spend, yeah. Man, this stuff is. I know we're gonna get into more of this stuff too. The whole, the whole leaning on like the NIL as your excuse for everything in the world. But I love Lanny's like, well, I'm pretty sure that they played Tennessee Martin last week, and that was a little bit different. So yeah, he's like, yeah, we.
I'm sure UT Martin didn't have as much as them last week, and they played. So yeah, we'll let it play out.
They played them, so yeah. But it's like, but I totally agree with Dan Lanning. He's like, basically, like, well, yeah, we invest in success, so we don't have to have excuses. So, but Mike Gundy's got his excuses.
I got college football getting a little spicy in week one out here. I like it. Sniping back and forth at each other.
I do too. Well, and especially like think about some of the Gundy. And Kelly,
yeah,
two guys that you can basically set your watch to them popping off about something. Yeah,
Gundy still got that mullet. He still got the party in the back.
I don't know. Someone tweeted out something where the other day he lifted his shirt up at his press conference. I
that's what we need.
Yeah, I have no context for that. So if we have any Oklahoma State fans, please explain to us why Mike Gundy lifted his shirt up at his presser. I think the mullet's a little bit chilled now, right?
I have not, I'll be honest with you, I have not seen or watched a Mike Gundy clip in a while. So I don't really know what he's rocking right now. I mean, I know a couple years ago it was pretty special, the hair that he had out there.
Yeah. Well, okay, let's see. Mike Gundy flashes the camera in viral press conference moment.
Oh, boy. Is Kuharsky there?
He's... If not, I'm sure he's gotten,
Oh, wait, we can't bully Kuharsky. We got in trouble for that last week on the text line.
Oh, is that right? Yeah. Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to find this. I mean, I don't know that I necessarily want to see it, but I'm just trying to see. Now, yeah, it looks like the mullet's still
there.
Yeah. He's still, it's a permullet, too.
Yeah.
Not just a mullet, it's permullet.
He's 58 now, so that means it's been – 18, almost 19 years since it. I'm a man. I'm 40.
I'm a man. I'm 58. Good God, don't say that.
Are they any good this year? What's the line in the Oregon Oklahoma State?
No, they just lost their QB too, and I don't know if it's for the season, but no, they're not good. I don't think they're going to be good, and I do wonder if maybe it might be coming to. I mean, how many times has he use Tennessee to get himself a raise there,
The line for Oregon-Oklahoma State is 28.5. Oregon minus 28.5, which, by the way, is more than Oregon was favored by Montana State last week, 27.5, which I told you was a ridiculous line. They ended up winning by like 50. But that just goes to show you. More respect for Montana State than Oklahoma State heading into this week.
That's wild. Yeah, here you go. Oh, I was just showing you the – well, wait, now it stopped. Sorry. But, yeah, he actually has a little bit more of a fro going with the mullets kind of a little bit bit chopped down. So, but don't ever lift your shirt up again, dude, at a press conference.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing.
I'm not very good at assessing bodies with shirts on.
I don't think that one will ever get old. Love that one.
God.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. Rex Road believes – there is way too much spin going on with a certain college football program out there. We'll get into that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.